Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, a series that's part of the Food Matters Live podcast. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist. Together we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is Dyche Llewellyn, also known as David, but only when he's in trouble. He is the head chef of product development within Co-op UK and says he feels honoured to help the nation decide what to eat. When I spoke to him, he was just a year into the job and loving it. He tells me how he went from growing up in the mumbles in Swansea to studying business, then getting this dream job in Manchester, and he puts to bed the idea that it rains more in Wales than anywhere else. Di is a little bit rude about his mum's cooking in this pod. Sorry, Mrs. Llewellyn. But he says food and hospitality is his absolute passion and he loves the camaraderie of this business that's like no other. I'll be back at the end with some key info about getting into food product development for high street brands. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast. Is it Di or David? It's a Welsh thing, right?
It is a Welsh thing, yeah. Depending on how angry you are with me, I get called Di normally, but if you're angry, David.
Now, anyone listening is picking up on your lovely Welsh accent. Which part of Wales are you from?
Swansea, South Wales, born and bred, moved away, and then I just kept coming back. I just had the urge to come back. It's living by the beach. I can't live anywhere else.
I was going to say, I've been to Wales when I was younger on camping trips and things, and you know, they always joke about it raining, and it did rain a lot. But the Welsh coast looks absolutely beautiful. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a village called the Mumbles, near the pier. And I work now in Manchester, and it definitely rains a lot more in Manchester than it does in Swansea in Wales. So I can disprove that rumour completely.
Yeah, you tell them, none of these stereotypes. Growing up by the sea, did that influence your career choice to become a chef? Were you eating lots of fish and seafood? Did you grow up with food?
Do you know what? I'd love to have the story where I was cooking next to my mother and it's this real family communal thing. But in hindsight, my mum, she's going to hate me for saying this, but she's a terrible cook.
Oh, no, Dad, you can't say that.
I mean, she's not terrible, but I sort of fell into hospitality and fell into a love of food. I sort of went along a career path, essentially, of business based on what I thought I wanted to do or what my parents expected. So I went to university to study that and it just didn't sit. I couldn't find anything that really felt right until I got into hospitality. And then I had a connection with food that just exploded. And then that was the start of it, really.
So when you went to uni or higher education to do business studies, where was that?
That was business studies and management in Swansea University.
And then after that, where did you go directly?
I went to work in a local restaurant in Mumbles, and this restaurant was incredibly busy. It was 200 covers inside, and outside you had the ability to do hundreds more, and it was heaving in the summer. And as soon as I went there and I saw the camaraderie, the buzz, the excitement, people's pride in what they were doing, meeting customers, and the whole hustle and bustle of it, and I was just absolutely hooked. And then that was it. I was like, right, I want my own restaurant. That's what I want to do. This is what I want to have. So I worked out front of house, worked my way up to manager, and then I left as manager and then came back the next day as a commis chef because I wanted to learn the back of house as well. So they were fantastic with me, to be fair. They allowed me to progress. They allowed me to make mistakes. It was never a blame culture, to be fair. So it just allowed this personal growth. And then I met a few people that inspired me along the way. It just takes a spark of curiosity. And then I just completely fell in love with it.
It's quite unusual to want to do front of house and then go and do back of house and be a chef. You don't meet many kind of 360 people like that.
I love to be customer facing. I think that's what sometimes you miss as a chef, is seeing people enjoy your food and talk about your food. Because to me now, that's what food is. It's about the ability to bring people together, and it's hugely powerful. But you miss that. So that's what I wanted to experience firsthand, great service. And then I wanted to start again from the bottom. It's a whole new learning process. I'm still learning now, to be fair. I've never stopped. Even when I went up to the sort of Michelin level, I always wanted to work for small brigades. So a small, close-knit team, because you just get to learn and you experience so much more and you're open to so much more.
I mean, you're incredibly down to earth about your chefing, but actually you're at top of your game now working for Co-op. Tell us about that role and your job title there.
I pinch myself, to be fair, because as a development chef, it's sort of the pinnacle to work in a retailer and to work for a retailer. But to be able to shape what the nation eat and have an influence on that is huge for me from a health and sustainable point of view, or to make sure that we're doing right for the customer. I'm really passionate about it and I take it very seriously.
So you're overseeing quite a big team. Approximately how many of you are there?
I have a team of around six. So I have a team of chefs, kitchen support, logistical managers and trends. But the wider team is much bigger. I think there's probably about 30 of us in total.
So now you're in this really senior role. How much cooking do you actually get to do? I mean, at work, not at home.
I always cook at home, 100%. I've got a young family as well. So now I take pride in teaching them. I cook a lot still. I'm in the kitchen 3-4 days a week. I still run workshops for the team. So we look at emerging ingredients or on-trend ingredients. We have upskill sessions where we research something ourselves and then we'll present that back to the wider team. And that's an engagement of all of us, from me through to my chefs, to my team, to product developers or anybody that's interested. There is talent everywhere. The best jerk chicken recipe I've ever tried has come from a colleague, because it's what their grandmother used to do. And without having this conversation about food and talking to them about it, and I would never have that recipe. But that's the beauty of food.
Can you perhaps talk me through how a new product gets on the co-op shelves and what your involvement and your team's involvement is on that?
So we map trends in a way that we're looking for relevance, I suppose. It's like mass appeal, be that a cuisine trend or be that an ingredient trend that's coming along. So we'll have an idea generation session where we'll get a group of creative people in the room, also from a commercial perspective as well. They'll need to make sure that we're not doing something that costs the earth. And then we'll work out what product, where it's going to sit in the shelf, what range is it for? Is it going to deliver for a customer and for co-op? And then we'll go away and we'll bring that to life. So we'll collate a load of ideas on this range or this product that we're thinking, and then we'll present that back as a team. People will get to try it, eat it, discuss it, slate it, if that's the case. That's one of the things that you have to be open to as a development chef, is that face-to-face criticism. And then we'll take that forward, and then that goes to a supplier brief. I mean, we've got amazing suppliers as well, and each one has got an incredibly talented team within there. So the process is so collaborative. That's what makes it fun. It doesn't make it any less easier the more people that you have involved, but it just means that you're making sure that you're doing the right thing along the way.
Of course, like the old phrase, too many cooks spoil the broth, but yeah. You probably know you're onto a good thing when you're in your test kitchen with your new prospective product and everybody or almost everybody is saying how delicious and how good it is, right?
It's a great feeling, yeah, absolutely, especially if you've had influence in that along the way. There are always changes because you have to take into consideration suppliers' capabilities and how they can manufacture and the equipment that they have available to them. So there's always subtle changes along the way. But of course, you're prepared for that. You know that's going to happen as a chef. So when you get to the stage where you're really proud of a product and you see it on the shelf, there's huge pride in that. Absolutely.
As I understand from my stalking of you, you used to work in sandwich development.
Yeah, I did work in the food to go area. So I worked for a supplier called Greencoat, who were the largest sandwich supplier, definitely in the UK. I'm probably pretty sure in Europe as well. Millions of sandwiches a week.
You came up with an award-winning sandwich.
Yeah, there's been two, but they've been very, very different.
Oh,
one was
two.
Really, really simple. No, it's not as flash as it sounds by any stretch of the imagination. It's an amazing industry award. It was just a chicken sandwich, essentially.
Well, what made it so good, this chicken sandwich?
I think I've changed a lot as a chef down the years, and my food has gone from simple to incredibly complex and intricate. And then as I'm getting older, it's getting much, much more simple again. So the first one was just a chicken and béarnaise mayonnaise sandwich with really nice brioche bread, just really, really simple, well-executed ingredients. And then the next one went off piece completely, and it had lots of different elements to it. Short rib and parsley was the other one on like a croissant.
Now, as well as your illustrious career as a sandwich designer, you also worked for everybody's middle-class posh favourite meal company, Charlie Bigham's. What did you do there?
Product development. So developing his range of ready meals. It was fantastic. I think working for Charlie really, really opened my eyes. He is an actual real person.
I was going to say, you've blown my mind. I thought he was just a brand name like Dr. Oetker.
Absolutely not. He is 100% real person. And a very, very creative, inspiring gentleman at that as well. He's brilliant. And all he wants to do is just create great food.
Well, he's done it. You can't knock a Charlie Bigham's ready meal. They're all delicious.
And no, his story was fascinating as well. It was really inspiring. Originally, he went traveling and then came back. And he probably caught the retail market at a time where ready meals weren't in their best state or he saw potential in an area and growth in an area that wasn't there at the time, and he got involved in it, and he has made changes to make ready meals better and tastier, and they're still doing great. So it's a really proud part of my career, actually.
I mean, they're not cheap, Charlie Bigham's, but I do feel like they're really good quality. You know, you see behind the curtains of the food industry. Is there a massive difference between a very expensive ready meal and a much cheaper one now that supermarkets have to have certain standards in their food?
There is, in terms of quality of ingredients. Yeah, I mean, I would say so. And how also how it's made. There is this misconception that there's lots of nasties in ready meals, or there's preservatives, or that there's additions that make it unhealthy. That's not true, in a way, in my experience. Anyway, I can only talk from my experience. The only difference for me making a sauce in a kitchen at home or in work in the restaurant kitchen to making one in a factory is that I use a shovel instead of a spatula. That's the difference. And you're cooking, each ready meal is made in a way that you would do at home. It's just the processes and technology are different. What I would probably say is that regionality and provenance comes a lot more in a higher tier ready meal. So say if we're looking at a lasagna, your standard core lasagna, it wouldn't have egg pasta, essentially. It would just have pasta that would be made with water, essentially. Mm. And then the higher up you go, the addition of egg, or it would have other flavorings, you would have other elements to it. You might have braised short rib through that, for example, and that's what elevates the product and really makes it stand out from its counterpart.
Now, if we go back to your chefing days, you talk about it really fondly, but it seems like you didn't stay that long in kitchens, like professional restaurant kitchens. Why was that? Where did you go after your first job?
So after my first job, I actually met my wife in the restaurant, and she persuaded me to move abroad. She wanted to, her parents were teachers in the army at the time, and she wanted to experience what living abroad was like. And bear in mind, I'd only met her parents once. She's like, do you want to come live with my parents? I was like, where's this? It's like, oh, Belize, like Central America. Like, okay, yeah, absolutely. We're going to go and do that. So I left Swansea and moved to Belize in the Caribbean for a year. And I did a bit of work with the army there. And that's when I really wanted to learn more, where I felt like I really wanted to go and push on and keep going. And then when I was there, I was applying for jobs in the UK. I came back, went straight into fine dining, where I thought that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to be taught properly and to have that grounding and that, keep my feet on the floor, always be humble and have that drill. I want to work clean, you know, just that regimented way of being a chef and how to organize myself, but also how to work with some amazing produce. So I did that. Yeah, I went to work for Aubergine, an amazing brigade. It taught me a huge amount of working with some amazing ingredients. Yeah, then I wanted to cook a different way. So I went to work for Bryn Williams down in Primrose Hill, a really different way of cooking. It was all about flavor. There was a lot of, I want to say, pretense around Aubergine. It's very, very French classical. Like the cheese trolley was about 170 different cheeses. But what Bryn taught me a lot about food is how to source, how to look for what you're doing, but also how to create flavor with complex processes and ingredients. Sometimes it could just be the best quality ingredients on a plate, and then that's good enough. As I said, my career has dipped and troughed. I've gone down the molecular route because I thought that was cool and interesting, and I wanted to change things completely and deconstruct everything. And then now you just come back, it all goes full circle. And now I'm just looking for simplicity all the time.
So you talk fondly about your time in kitchens and how much you learned there. What would you say is the most useful life lessons you learned in kitchens that you still bring with you now?
That it gets better. I think I've always sort of prided myself to work hard, and I believed in what I was doing, and I believed in the end result. But also when it's tough, just to stick it out. And I don't mean tough from a hierarchical old school kitchen environment, because I was lucky enough in my career that that didn't really affect me, and I wasn't really in any kitchens that had that toxic environment.
Oh gosh, I was. That's yeah, why I got out.
I mean, everybody has their stories, right? Yeah. And probably I do have a few, but nothing that I can hold my heart on and say that really affected me in the wrong way. It was all really, I had a really, really positive experience. But there were times where I thought it was tough, and there were times where I wanted to stop and try something else and think, why am I doing this? But just to have that courage of your own conviction and just keep going and keep carrying on and believe in the process and believe in yourself and just remember how much you love food and why you're in the industry in the first place.
You know, at Co-op, you must see so many roles in food that are really exciting and interesting. Maybe not even your own role, other roles. Do you think food is a good industry for young people to get into?
Absolutely. there's no industry like it for me. There's no industry where it encapsulates all of your senses, no matter what. So it's touch, taste, smell, feel. It just creates excitement by what you see and what you're doing. The camaraderie, the sense of teamwork and collaboration that goes on, even from a restaurant kitchen all the way through to what I'm doing now, is it blows me away, to be fair. And as an industry, we're constantly striving to work closer together. I wasn't really aware of this when I was a restaurant chef at all. I was searching for the next thing, but I didn't know what that was at the time. I thought, well, I'm going to have to move restaurants. I'm going to have to be in restaurants all the time. It was just restaurant, restaurant, restaurant. But food is much more bigger than that. Food is much more diverse than that. And it took a meeting with a lovely lady who was like, actually, have you thought about this? Have you thought a bit differently about this? Have you gone and out and researched companies? Have you looked at how we buy food or how we get food? And I hadn't done that at all. So that opened up another huge new avenue to get into with food. And it's not necessarily just chefing either. There's nutrition, there's product development, there's buy-in, there's subject matter experts. It's just absolutely fascinating and a huge, huge industry.
So hang on a minute, Di. Who was this mystery lady? Was she a recruiter? Was she a chef?
Yeah, she was a recruiter at the time. Yeah, Jack Mitchell, her name is. We just got chatting over a coffee one day, and I was explaining to her how I felt about the industry. I wasn't sure what my next step was. And she was like, listen, you should try this. I'll put you in touch with somebody, go for an interview. And that was it. And luckily enough, I got my first position in Bakkavor. So pie topped, ready meals, hummus dips. They were doing fried samosas at the time. And I just remember walking into the factory for the first time and seeing a conveyor belt of potatoes like I've never seen before. It was like this mountain of food. The sheer scale is just staggering. I don't think anybody really appreciates the size of a food manufacturer and what they do and how we source ingredients or how they're processed and made.
But you found it exciting and you stuck with it.
Oh, it's incredibly exciting. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I was hooked as soon as I started. But the industry itself, it can be notoriously difficult to get into. I hear that a lot from people that contact me. I firmly believe that experience is not necessary in this industry, as a development chef especially. And I will actively look for people without experience. As long as you've got the willingness to learn and you want to progress and move on, and you have the attitude where you are open to where your career can take you, essentially, that's all that I'm looking for.
But what about this business degree you did all those years ago? Do you ever get to use elements of it?
No, absolutely not. No, I don't. I don't. It was, yeah, my accounting skills and business management have never, ever come out again. Thank goodness. I was terrible. I have not got a business bone in my body.
It's me again. So that was the very nice Di who clearly loves this industry and he's really keen for as many of you to join it as possible. Di said he loves that in food you're always learning a new skill and progressing your career, and he feels a huge responsibility in choosing healthy, delicious options for shoppers to eat and feed their families with. Di started off as a kitchen chef, literally at the bottom and working his way up until he eventually got a job developing the very posh Charlie Bigham's ready meals. So kitchens really are still a fantastic way to get into product development, but they're not the only way. As we know from other podcast guests, a passion for food and a willingness to learn are the main deal breakers here. A junior development chef might start on anywhere from £25,000 a year, going up to £35,000 for an assistant development chef, or £50,000 or more for a head development chef. I've even seen jobs in the United Arab Emirates for up to £100,000 a year. You will need some kind of catering qualification, such as an NVQ, a City and Guilds, or a culinary degree. But many apprenticeship programs will accept those with kitchen experience alone, as long as you can prove that you have great ideas about how to combine flavors and you're keeping an eye on current food trends. It's worth looking at companies like Bakkavor, Compass Group, and Sodexo. And of course, keep an eye on the Co-op Jobs Board, where there's a very useful tool helping you to write a CV for the first time if you've never done it before. Thanks so much to Di for speaking so passionately about the industry. And thanks to you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.